You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, John Boehner, this is so interesting to watch. You've got people like Jeb Bush and Newt Gingrich and, you know, the supposedly rational voices, although Jeb Bush did sign that letter back in 1998, or the whole, you know, project for a new American century thing about, you know, let's go take Iraq's oil fields. That worked out real well. And Newt Gingrich has his own long list of weirdnesses. But anyhow, the supposedly rational voices in the Republican Party are saying to the crazies, you know, the Ted Cruz's and the Tea Partiers in the House, don't shut down the government. I mean, even the Chamber of Commerce, don't shut down the government. Don't default on our debt, just as a way to kill off Obamacare, because they're all like, you know, we're going to hold our breath until we turn blue if you don't defund Obamacare. And that's really kind of what it's boiling down to. It's really, really amazing. So I wanted to get a rational conservative perspective on this. David Selig is on the line with us, conservative commentator and pro-business advocate, founder and president of Selig and Associates, the website TrueTaxHelp.com, and in New York City. Hey, David, welcome back to the program.
Tom, thanks for having me on. It's a real pleasure.
It's always nice having you here with us. David, first question. If Obamacare is going to be such a disaster, then why don't the Republicans, I mean, it's about more than 50% of it's already law and already in effect, and people seem to like that. The other half is what they say is going to be a disaster, the individual mandate. It sets up on October 1st. It goes into effect on January 1st. Why don't Republicans push to make it happen even faster, so that the disaster happens and the president can have egg on his face, you know, sooner?
You see, that's why I keep saying you need to run for either Congress or Senate, Tom, because you really, it's hard for me to refute that type of logic. You know, there's a lot in Obamacare that is good. Unfortunately, there's also some that is very bad. I just want your listening audience to know I'm not in favor of closing the government down just to effectuate something that they want. Alternatively, I'm also not in favor of just spending money willy-nilly. My biggest issue with Obamacare is that the extrapolations that the government, well, the authors, the promoters of Obamacare have made are really cut from whole cloth in many cases. They rely upon these estimations of future earnings, and I don't think the dollars are actually there, particularly when they keep tinkering with it.
So you think Bush Great Recession and the damage of Reaganomics is going to stay with us longer than the actuaries at the Obamacare office are saying?
You know, the idea of the healthcare exchanges is an excellent idea. It fosters great competition with the insurance companies and such. You know, I'm a little concerned about the numbers that they said of actual uninsured Americans. I disagree with them, and I will tell you why. Mm-hmm. The 2010 census included illegal aliens, and they used those illegal aliens when they were determining how many people did or did not have insurance. And that's just a fact. And, you know, to me, that's cooking the books. That's not being honest with the Americans.
So, in other words, when we say we have 40, 45 million people without health insurance, 10 million, 12 million, 15 million, whatever you want, should be deducted from that number because they're illegal aliens. But, David, they're here. They're human beings. Most of them are not going away any day soon. And, in fact, in all probability, they're going to have a path to citizenship. So why not count them?
Obamacare doesn't cover them. They are an excluded class. He kicked them in the patoot.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. You're absolutely right that they can't sign up for an exchange for Obamacare unless they're a citizen. You're absolutely right on that.
You got to go back to the emergency rooms. He didn't solve the problem.
No, no. You don't have to do that, though. But that's the thing. Bernie Sanders got 10,000 Obamacare clinics. One of my daughters runs one of these things, or helps run one of these things, in Portland, Oregon. And these are comprehensive medical facilities that do everything short of ER and surgery. And they're largely free, and they do serve illegal immigrants.
Well, there's no free lunch, kid, and you know that. And the fact of the matter is he used these people to count them, and then when he was done using them, he threw them out. And they should be able to treat these people, but they're not. They are saying, they're not even saying get in the back of the bus. They're saying you can't get on the bus.
No, they're saying go to the free clinic.
No, they're saying go to the emergency rooms, and you and I both know it, and they're going to bankrupt the hospitals and run the costs up.
No, check out the free clinics, David. That's why they're there. They're the safety buffer for two groups, and Senator Sanders is pretty clear about this when he put this into the legislation. Number one, for rural people who don't even have access to a nearby hospital or comprehensive medical settings, and number two, for populations of people who may not be eligible under Obamacare, which would include things like people who are visiting this country legally, people who are visiting this country illegally.
That's a great way of putting it.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, I have used medical services in Germany, England, and Australia, and I'm not a citizen of any of those countries. Every country has to have a way of dealing with tourists or, you know, be they legal or illegal. I mean, I was legal in every case, but, arguably, whatever. Every country has to have a way of dealing with those people. And
I agree with Tom Hartman. I agree with you 110%. What I disagree with, though, like I said, is the way they were used, manipulated, taken advantage of, counted to make these figures.
Well, let's stipulate that you're right,
Americans are uninsured when, in fact, they were not. And then to turn around and back end and say, but these guys are out.
Okay, well,
but now you're out.
Let's stipulate for a moment, David, that you and your numbers are right and that Obama was a really, really wily politician and getting Obamacare through by saying 40 million uninsured Americans when actually it was only 30 million happened.
Right.
That's water under the bridge. What do we do now?
Okay. Yeah, that's a compelling question. I mean, I don't think we should close the government. What I do think is we have to look at these figures critically, and I don't think we should depart from generally accepted accounting standards, because the figures that they're making, the anticipated income, what they think they're going to make from taxing tanning salons, for crying out loud, is so astronomical. These good intentions, these rose-colored glasses, they sound great until you try them and they fail. Now, I don't want the American people to fail just because I may not support the president.
So what's
commander-in-chief, but we
what's your solution
now?
What's your alternative?
Oh, as far as the mandate and such?
Well, yeah, or Obamacare in general. I mean,
I personally would like to scrap the program. I would like to make insurance less restrictive. I don't understand why an insurance company in New York cannot sell insurance in another state. I don't think that's fair to the consumer.
Because each state has insurance commissioners that represent the interests of the people of those states.
Amazing. You go
it's the 10th Amendment.
Insurance is reasonable, and you go to another, and it's bad. I'm also opposed to community pricing, and where you can have an individual who has just gone to rack and ruin for any number of reasons.
So what you're saying, David, is that whatever state has the lowest common denominator, least restrictive, least consumer-friendly rule should become the national standard.
Ooh, I don't know about all that.
Well, that's how it worked with credit cards. When we went away from statewide credit card commissioners to a national system, they all moved to North Dakota because they had the least restrictive rules.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the credit cards, well, you and I have spoken about that before. I mean, that is modern-day slavery. I don't care how you look at it.
Yeah. I don't want that to happen to healthcare. Anyhow, David, we're out of time, but you make a very interesting point that Obamacare was sold using census figures, which include illegal undocumented people, but then it doesn't cover them. That's fascinating. David, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom, and thanks for listening.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. David Selig, TrueTaxHelp.com, by the way, is his website on the line with us. But back now. Oh, I got to tell you about the Pope. Another one from the Pope. It's not the problem. Hey, welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. You know, if you live in Maryland or Washington, D.C., I do. Yeah. I didn't even watch a lot of television. I mean, you know, maybe maybe an hour or so a day, and it's news and it's channel flipping. You know, I'm usually popping back and forth between MSNBC and Fox and CNN and you know, just you know, what's going on out there in the world. You know, it's after we get home from doing the TV show and stuff, but I'm seeing these ads that are encouraging businesses to move to places like Texas from places like Maryland. And frankly, I think this is just a warm up for another presidential run for Rick Perry, you know, the Texas governor, because he's now started an ad campaign in the home state of Governor Martin O'Malley, who's a Democrat from Maryland, who could be a potential Democratic candidate for president as well. Although I personally think Hillary's got it in the bag. We'll see. But the message behind, which is why, you know, Daryl Issa is like all Benghazi, Hillary's fault all the time. You know, he's really trying to take down Hillary Clinton. But anyhow, the message behind the ad campaign is pretty obvious. And basically, here it is. Unlike that taxed blue state Maryland, where billionaires actually pay income taxes and poor people have access to Medicaid, low-taxed, limited Medicare red state Texas is booming and ready to welcome billionaires and staff their businesses with even cheaper workers. That's basically the essence of the message. However, if Rick Perry really wanted to show people the real Texas, here's how his ad would go. And if I had the ability, I would do a Texas accent. I don't. I'm sorry. I mean, even George Bush, he was constantly criticized because he grew up in Connecticut and Maine and you know, went to Andover and Massachusetts, and he didn't have a Texas accent, but he faked it. But he didn't fake it all that well. And so, you know, real Texans like Jim Hightower, you were just terribly offended by it. So I'm not even going to try. But I will change my voice slightly so you can – this is a faux ad, but – and I don't have a 10-gallon hat to wear. I'm going to have to get one of those. Anyhow, but here's what Rick Perry's ad really should say. When you grow tired of struggling to make ends meet in wacky liberal states like Maryland, think Texas, where we're number one in low-wage job growth. Come to Texas, where if you're poor, you have to pay taxes on everything you buy and every penny of your income. But if you're a billionaire, you get all those federal breaks and don't even have to pay a state income tax. Come to Texas, where you might have to drive more than 4 hours to get birth control pills because our state's new abortion laws have forced most women's health clinics to close down. But our billion-dollar megachurch industry has its arms wide open to teach your little lady how to be happy in the kitchen. Come to Texas, where we have some pretty good hospitals, and you won't have to mingle with those smelly poor people because our state has the most people without insurance in the country. Come to Texas, where if some uppity person of color bothers you, we know how to deal with them. We lead the country in executions. In fact, we've executed more than 500 people since 1976. We even executed a mentally disabled man last year after the Supreme Court said it was illegal. Come to Texas, where we gerrymander poor black and Latino people out of any chance for political power. Come to Texas, where your kids could learn some of the most up-to-date scholarship on American history. You know, stuff like how Thomas Jefferson was a rabid Christian who loved them churches. So what do you think? New ad for Rick Perry? Anyhow, what Rick Perry doesn't want you to know is that the Texas model, by all standards, is a disaster unless you happen to be a billionaire. I mean, Perry's right when he says that Texas is great for business, and that's the problem. Texas's model is only good for business, in particular big corporations, you know, the Walmart kind of businesses. Everyone else is pretty much screwed. But make no mistake about it, Rick Perry's anti-Maryland ad, it really isn't about Maryland, and it isn't even really about Texas. What's really going on here, and whoever is funding this, I don't think it's the state of Texas funding this. I think it's some cranky right-wing billionaire, because what it's really about are the two competing visions of government that we have right here in the United States right now. On the one hand, there are places like Vermont, Massachusetts, and Oregon. These states, commonly called blue states, have made a commitment to providing health care for all their citizens. They've made a commitment to expand democracy. They're arguably moving toward a more European-style form of social democracy. Massachusetts has had universal health insurance, Romney Care, since 2006. And Vermont has already legislatively passed, the Governor Shumlin has signed, a complete single-payer system, just like the one Canada uses. They're just waiting for Obamacare to make it legal. Another year or two, or three. On the other hand, though, there are states like Texas, states that make it almost impossible to start a union, make it pretty much illegal for women to control their bodies, restrict voting rights for anyone who's not white, and let billionaires pay nothing in taxes while the poor foot the bill. These same states, by the way, suck billions from the federal government every year, way more than most blue states, all while their governors complain about federal tyranny. They're takers, not makers. And this taker model for states is spreading. Just look at North Carolina. Since Republicans took hold of every branch of that state's government earlier this year, conservatives in that state legislature have turned the Tar Heel states into Texas North. They've passed extreme voter suppression laws. They've raised taxes on the poor people. They've cut taxes on the rich people. And they're restricting reproductive choice. Similar Republican plots are afoot in Wisconsin and Michigan, where and I'd say even, you know, Maine and Indiana, where Tea Party extremists have started to roll back the clock on a century's worth of progress. Ultimately, here, this is the bottom line. At the end of the day, Rick Perry's hustle about Texas is exactly that. It's a hustle. The red state taker model is, as a growing number of Americans are starting to realize, one giant scam that only benefits billionaires and the corporate elite who fund the Republican Party. And this is why, I mean, this is why they have Moral Mondays in North Carolina. They've caught on to the con, and they're trying to stop the spread of the Texas model in North Carolina. So Marylanders and Americans everywhere, don't listen to Rick Perry. It's time to mess with Texas. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. What do you think? How do you think that this Republican model is going to succeed in spreading across America?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Or do you think that more and more Americans are going to look at Vermont and Oregon and say, wow, we want to be like that? 39 is in tonight. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Pope. I've been saying, like, for months now, I'm not seriously thinking about converting to Catholicism because I just, like, you know, I'm not a joiner, really. But, wow. I mean, for years and years and years, I've said if somebody's put a gun to my head and said, pick a religion right now, you got to pick it and relive it for the rest of your life, I'd become a Hasidic Jew. I'm starting to think, though, that the Catholics, this Pope is doing some, he came out, here's the story, this is above the fold, the New York Times today. He's talking about how, you know, the church has been, you know, John Paul II, in fact, back in the day, you know, back when Louise and I went over to meet Pope John Paul II, that was before the Bush presidency. I think that was in 2000, but it was before George Bush was president. But John Paul II condemned, essentially, George W. Bush for his wars. And in fact, begged him not to do his invasion of Iraq. But he ignored the Pope. But still, J2P2 and Pope Benedict, they both kind of went along with the whole, you know, the church is all about abortion and not liking abortion and not liking gays and stuff like that. And so these very inflammatory social issues were typically what people thought of when they thought of the Catholic religion. And this new Pope, Pope Francis, I mean, he has called out rich people over and over and over again. He refuses to live in the fancy schmancy papal quarters in the Vatican. And Louise and I have not been inside the inside of it, but we've been there. We've been nearby. I mean, we've been in parts of the Vatican that the public can't get to when we went over to meet John Paul II. And he says instead, he's staying in the guest house. Because it's simple, you know. He wants a simple Pope is staying in the guest house. He doesn't like the fancy Pope bedroom. Too fancy for him. He's called out rich people. He's called out big corporations. He's said, you know, everything shouldn't be all about making money. He's essentially called for an end to billionaires. And now, in remarkably blunt language, to quote Lori Goodstein in today's New York Times, the Pope says that the Catholic Church has grown obsessed with preaching about abortion, gay marriage, and contraception. And he has chosen not to talk about those issues. There you go. He says, it is not necessary to talk about these issues all the time. We have to find a new balance. Otherwise, even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards, losing the freshness and fragrance of the gospel. Jesus never mentioned abortion. He never mentioned homosexuality. He talked about caring for the poor over and over and over and over again. And he essentially condemned super rich people, or said, you know, look out, you're going to have some, it's going to be easier for a camel to get through an eye of a needle than for you to get to heaven. Good luck, Charlie. Remember the rich guy came to him and said, how do I get to heaven? He says, give away everything you own to the poor and then come follow me. And the guy turns around and goes, oh, I can't do that. This Pope is so cool. He's just so cool. He's living in the guest house. One of the cardinals gave him a 1985 beat up old, well, it's not beat up, it looks nice, but I mean, it's an old, I don't remember the exact year. I think it was in the 80s. It's a 20-year-old car with a couple hundred thousand miles on it. Says, here, you want to drive around? Because the Pope wanted to drive around. He's making his security people crazy. Likes to hang out with people. It's amazing. I have a feeling that the Republican Party in the United States, which has done so well over the last decade or two, kind of conflating the Pat Robertson, paranoid, hysterical, reactive, social, hard right, religious element in Protestantism with a similar strain within the Catholic Church, with people like Bill, the guy that is the head of the Catholic League, some Irish name. Anyhow, that the Republican Party has got to be experiencing a moment of terror and schizophrenia, that the Catholic Church might be holding values traditionally held by the Democratic Party rather than these punitive, wag your finger in the face values that the Republican Party is all about, and the hard right, the religious right. So, Wesley in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Wesley, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, you know, when a political party becomes only an instrument of the rich to throw people off of health care and to deny them food, and this is so in contrast to our Christian values as a nation, mm-hmm. that I can only come to the conclusion as an old Presbyterian that the Republican Party in its present form is now the party of Satan.
Party of Satan?
Satan. These are evil men who have turned their backs on the interests of their constituents to work only for the interests of their corporate masters. Ergo, they have become liars. And they are without honor.
Well, let me add to your conspiracy theory, Wesley. Are you familiar with the difference between the right side up five-pointed star and the upside down five-pointed star?
Yes, I am.
And so you know the right side up five-pointed star is based on like Michelangelo's man, you know, where the point is at the top, that's the head.
Right.
The two
right.
points going off to the side are the arms. The two points at the bottom are the legs. And it's like the humanity and in fact, you know, sacred stuff, good stuff, positive stuff. That's why it's on our flag. When you flip it upside down, it becomes the goat, you know, where at the top you've got the two spikes going off at the top because it's now resting on a single point. You got the two points at the top. That's the goat's horns. You got two stars, two sides going off the side. That's the goat's ears. And the one point down at the bottom is the goat's chinny chin chin. And this is the goat of Satan worshiping. And so the upside down five-pointed star is the more or less official symbol of Satan worshipers worldwide. the Republican Party in the year 2000, when George W. Bush was running for president, changed the stars on their logo. It's that way to this day. And they flipped those three stars on the elephant upside down. So maybe they're trying to tell you something.
I doubt it's, if it's as organized as all that, Tom.
I think it might be that whoever worked in their graphics department back in 2000 might not have been either was a hyper enthusiastic Republican Satanist, or else was, you know, an artist that the Republicans hired who kind of wanted to get the message out and just figured he'd slip it by these idiots and pulled it off. But just go to GOP.gov or GOP.org or Republicans.org or, you know, any of the official Republican websites, and you will see the stars are upside down on the elephant. And, you know, on a flag, that's a distress signal. But when it's just the individual stars, that's the sign of Satan. Wesley, there may be something to what you say. Thank you for the call. Frank in Staten Island, New York. Hey, Frank.
Tom, I'm so glad to talk to you. The thing about Texas, I mean, they ran those ads here in New York, and I was so infuriated by them. I was going to write Perry a letter, and in the letter I was going to only put a couple of words and then enclose that famous drawing that someone did where it said Texas goes boom and had that pipeline blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to put that picture in the letter, but I never got
it. The pipeline? You mean the fertilizer plant?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. That was
yeah.
the
in West Texas.
Got,
yeah.
He got bent out of shape when he saw that cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they try to run that ad in Missouri, and I think some radio station wouldn't do it. And the coup de grace was that there was some guy got one of those model helicopters that flies. He put a video camera on it. He flew it over this plant or something in Texas, and they showed how they were polluting the stream with pig's blood or something like that.
Really?
So you know what they did in Texas? They outlawed those model helicopters.
Right, of course, of course. Frank, thanks for sharing that. Excellent. Omar in Aurora, Illinois, you got something else to add to the Texas ad?
Yes. Also remind you about the unpaved roads because there's no state taxes. They can't afford to use asphalt, so they've been going to gravel roads.
That's right. So move to Texas where you won't have to worry about high-speed car collisions because we don't have pavement. Right? You can't have a car accident on a high-speed road with a high-speed paved road because all we've got are dirt roads, so nobody goes over 35 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Omar, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Say what, Shano? Oh, 10 seconds. Okay, all right. Not, we can't. Diana, Al, Brenda, Betty, John, Harvey, Danny, and others waiting. We will pick up your calls as we continue through the program. I think it would be great fun. Somebody ought to put together a really funny spoof on that Texas ad, because I am convinced that Texas ad has got nothing to do with Texas at all, that it's all about spreading the right-wing message, that there are places in America where John Galt would want to go live. I'm serious about this. This is dog whistle stuff to those, you know, people who are emotionally 14 years old and just read Atlas Shrugged.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know who I'm talking about. Paul Ryan. 15 minutes before the end. It's talk media for the rest of us. The Tom Hartman Program. So glad to have you with us. And Brenda in Stillwater, Minnesota, listening on Minnesota's Progressive Voice, AM 950. Hey, Brenda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say your guest was saying that Obama made his case for Obamacare by using inflated numbers because mm-hmm. he was counting the number of illegal immigrants. And I would like to say, I don't care if he did that. There should not be one person in this country, not one, who can't get medical care because they don't have insurance.
Agreed.
And so it doesn't matter to me if numbers were inflated. And there are also a lot of people who don't have, they have insurance, but it's not good enough.
Yeah, I mean, basically, David's argument was that Obama was such a slick politician that he snookered the Republicans. That's fine with me.
I mean. Well, and there, you know, I have three brothers, three, and all, none of them have insurance, not one.
Oh, my.
So it's not just illegal immigrants who don't have insurance. There are a lot of people out there who don't have it. It's not right. My brothers, a couple of them are getting older. They're in their 50s.
Yeah.
They don't have insurance.
They need it. They need it.
They work hard. Yes, they work hard, and they haven't been to doctors in years.
Oh, my. Well, hopefully.
There are a lot of people out there.
Yeah, hopefully they will get covered, and everything will be fine come January 1. You know, God willing, and the Republicans don't rise. Brenda, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to AM 950. Betty in Big Sandy, Tennessee. Hey, Betty, what's up?
Hey. Good to talk to you, Tom.
Thank you.
I want to tell you about a call I got. It was a guy telling me that I don't have a cell phone or I don't have internet. But he said, I really got a good package for you. And I said, where are you calling from? And he said, Texas. I said, well, you know, Texas needs water and you're fracking and they need water and... He wouldn't say nothing then.
Huh.
And I said, well, that's what you should be interested in.
There you go. Take care of your own problems in Texas before you call me in Tennessee and try to sell me something. Good on you, Betty. Betty, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. That's a great one. Diana in Westminster, Colorado, listening on AM 760 out of Denver. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Hi there. I want to tell you thank you so much for encouraging people to get out there and get active. I'm one of the people Republicans love to hate. I'm a single mom, and I happen to have disease, so I can't work full-time, but I do work. I'm on a few government assistance programs,
mm-hmm.
and one of them is CCAP, which helps. It's a branch of social services that helps us pay for child care when we're working or at school.
Uh-huh.
And the local community college that provides the care right at the school, after school, for my 7-year-old son, right at the beginning of the school year, cut off all the CCAP families, and we were told it had to do with an equipment issue. I dug deeper and found out that the little machine we have to use, because we're all issued a card like everybody has, and it looks like a credit card machine, that machine has to be connected to a dedicated phone line. And what I was told was there is no dedicated phone line, and so they just don't want to do it anymore. And which is cutting off I don't know how many families from this program, making all of us either not work or work fewer hours. So I sent out I lost count at 28 letters. I sent letters to the governor and several congressmen and several senators, both state and U.S. I sent them out on Monday, and I got a call on Tuesday morning from the head honcho guy of CCAP over all of Colorado telling me I did the right thing by bringing this to their attention. And good, he is so glad that they are getting this rectified. And he talked to somebody at the local community college who provides the care. And he said, starting next week, they will care for your son at their expense until this telephone line situation gets rectified.
Wow. Wow. Good on you, Diana.
And it not only helped me, it helped all the other families. I'm just horripilating thinking about, you know, just these letters. I thought, what can I do? And I always hear you say, get out there and get active. And I had a few friends tell me, sure, write some letters. And I thought, I've got to do something. And voila, look at that. I got a call from the top dog.
Diana, you are officially an agent of change. God bless you. That is wonderful.
Thank
Good
you.
On you. Thanks so much for sharing
Thank
that story
so
with us and for having the courage to
Thank
step
you.
Out. Great.
I can't tell you how it makes me feel so good. I feel so empowered.
Yep.
And in fact, one of the people at the community college told me, well, I'm glad you got what you wanted. And I said, it's not a matter of what I wanted. It's a matter of all of what I needed to keep working, me and all these other families. And she said, oh, okay. So,
yeah, and it's what's right. It's what's right. Diana, thanks for the call. I've got to move along, but thank you for the call. And that's an inspiring call for the day. In fact, if you'd like to hold on for just a minute here, Diana's on line two. Let's make her our book winner of the day, book recipient of the day. We'll send you a copy of Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country, autographed by me. And you can tell Danielle your address, and she'll send it off to you. And if you already have that book, we can send you a different one. So Diana's on line two. Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey, just a minute to the break. You wanted to talk about the earthquake of Fukushima?
Yes, well, they had an earthquake today, a 3.5 earthquake, and you know, it was on what they call the Ring of Fire, the Ring of Fire, and the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant right here is on the same.
Yeah, it's on the eastern end of the Ring of Fire. Yep.
Right, and we're always told the big one is coming at 0.9, and the Diablo Canyon actually sits on the reactor number one sits on the Diablo Cove fault line. So I say before California is destroyed and all the food in California becomes radioactive, close the Diablo Canyon now because the polar caps are melting and there's more tectonic plate movement, and we're just asking for trouble here.
You're absolutely right.
The end of California.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Harvey, thank you for the call. There was, I think it was a 5.6 quake in the neighborhood of Fukushima a couple of weeks ago, too. It wasn't right there, but it was nearby. I mean, it's nuclear power is insane. It's stupid. And you know, putting my Barry Goldwater hat on, nuclear power wouldn't be possible without government subsidies.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mike Papantonio, star host, attorney, ringoffireradio.com, is on the line with us. Ring of Fire Radio, of course. And along with Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Sam Cedar and David Bender and the whole collection and cast and crew. Hey, Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how you doing today?
Just
as you would say.
Hard.
That's right. I didn't know we had a pirate appreciation day.
It is International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Okay.
Ahoy, matey. Okay, yeah, I live on a boat. I should be doing this. Anyhow, I think, you know, sometimes great minds think alike. I published this piece. We did this as our daily take yesterday or the day before on TV, and it's published over at Truthout about this three-act play of the repudiation of Reaganomics. Act number one being that America said no thank you to John Kerry. We didn't like Reagan's war in Grenada. We didn't like Bush's wars. We don't want any more wars. Act two was the repudiation of Clintonomics, which are a variation on Reaganomics, at least in large part, with Larry Summers. And I'm hoping Act three is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think you got it right. I mean, look, you're talking about millennials abandoning all these myths that center around Reaganism, that center around Clintonism. It is really an abandonment, honestly, if you watch it develop, of this new Obama regime that looks an awful lot like the old Clinton regime. But look, here's what we have. You had Reaganomics gave us no government was their mantra, laissez-faire, a free-for-all food fight where it came to capitalism, a no safety net, every man for himself, and the 40-something GOPers that we still hear talking about like that, obviously Bobby Jindal, Scott Walker, Paul Ryan, and Ted Cruz, they are a minority among millennials. On the other side, you had the Clinton picture. The Clinton was Clinton picture, not much different from the Reagan picture. Free for all, food fight where it comes to capitalism, diminished safety net for millennials, economic growth. Economic growth is more important than economic redistribution or economic security. And there was a total abandonment of what you and I grew up with, Kennedy and Johnson kind of government. Mm-hmm. And in that, on the Clinton side, you got Cory Booker. And you've got Obama, that kind of the core that surrounds Obama. But this is a big shift, Tom. This shift is what we saw up in New York with Bill de Blasio. We saw a new attitude. We saw millennials. When you ask a millennial, what do you think about socialism and democratic socialism? No problem with them. They haven't bought into the old myths that both Reaganism and Clintonism gave them. They're coming into an America where they have no wages, they have no benefits, they have no employment. They're coming into an America that they have seen burned down with the old governments of both Clinton and Reagan. So they're ready to abandon all that. It's very positive. It's happening in New York. I think it's going to take place in other parts of the country.
I see this large arc, Mike, where we started we could start at 1920 to make it really simple. You had Warren Harding running on a campaign platform of literally, he said, more business in government, less government in business, right? And that kicked off the Roaring Twenties. He dropped the top tax rate from 90% down to 25% and deregulated business. And you had 9 years of bubble, and then it burst. And then you had that was the first, the first Reagan revolution. That lasted until 1932, 33, when FDR came in. And then we had the New Deal revolution. The New Deal revolution stood until 1981 with the Reagan revolution.
Yes.
And the Reagan revolution has not yet been stopped or overturned. Clinton made it friendlier and fine-tuned it around the edges. And some people in the Clinton administration, like Robert Rubin, actually did good stuff. But basically, even Obama has not changed the Reagan revolution. We still have taxes on the super rich below 50%, low capital gains, blah, 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 blah. Do you see the repudiation, a new revolution, a new deal kind of revolution coming down the road?
Yes, and a guy like Obama is shocked by it. The people who surrounded Obama are shocked that you have people that got pushback on Syria, got pushback on Summers, got pushback on legalization of marijuana, got pushback on DOMA, got pushback on Social Security, got pushback on the XL pipeline. He wasn't prepared for that, and the people that surround him aren't prepared because they're so damn out of sync with what's happening outside the Beltway. They never leave the Beltway. They don't understand that there's a new millennial government that is going to take form. And we saw it with Bill de Blasio. Look, the critics can downplay Bill de Blasio as much as they want, but I got to tell you something, Tom. This is a guy who is running fourth in a race. You had Bloomberg every day, the Wall Street darling, Bloomberg out talking about what a leftist threat de Blasio was. And you know what? They said, that's fine with us. This is what we want. It is rejection. And Obama better see this. And you know who really better understand it? Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton reinvents herself as a genuine progressive, the way that Teddy Roosevelt did, frankly, after what's his name was shot, when he was vice president. If she reinvents herself as a genuine progressive, then I think she has a tremendous opportunity here to be the next FDR.
But Tom,
on the other hand, if she doesn't, boy, are we toast.
Tom, why don't we stand back and say, don't Democrats, I'm not a Democrat, by the way, but don't Democrats sound like Republicans in this need to perpetuate generation after generation these same old names? Look who you have in the Democratic Party. They're stars. Elizabeth Warren, Jeff Markley, Sherrod Brown, John Tester. These are people who are young. They have appeal to millennials. They understand the rejection of the Clinton years. They understand the rejection of Obama. The rejection of Reaganism. Why is it that the Democrats can't understand that and embrace the fact that there is a pivot taking place in this country? Why is it that we have to go back to the same well every time and say we have to dress Hillary Clinton up into something we know she's not?
Yeah.
We know she's not this new progressive that she'll portray herself as. She came from the damn Rose Law Firm. Yeah, in Arkansas, one of the most conservative corporate firms in America.
On all those facts, you're absolutely right. And when Franklin Roosevelt was elected president, he was running on a platform of small, gradual incrementalism. He was, the wealthy plutocrat. When he was governor of the state of New York, he was not a progressive. He was kind of okay with the progressive agenda, but he was mostly a machine politician. And he got it. That America was in a crisis and it needed a genuine progressive revolution.
I agree with that totally. It was a pivot that he made. He made it successfully. You may be right, but why is it that we want to go to the same well rather than inventing?
No, I'm with you.
Sherrod Brown.
I'm with you. I would love to see President Elizabeth Warren.
Gosh! How could we ask for anything better? How about a guy? How about a Grayson, Elizabeth Warren? Why don't we think out of the norms and say, why do we keep going back to the same well? Clintonism is dead among millennials. Obama never got that. The people that are advising him today never got that. That's why he missed Syria. He missed Summers. He missed legal marijuana. He missed DOMA. He missed gender. He missed Social Security. And he's going to miss the XL pipeline issue because he is so out of sync and so tied in to the old notions of politics.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not just Bill Clinton, by the way. It's a large part of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it is. No question.
And you know, weirdly, you've got the Tea Partiers saying the same thing about the Republican Party, except that they want to take the Republican Party in the direction of crazy, and we'd like to take the Democratic Party in the direction of rational.
Yeah. You know, rather than getting pulled along with the crazy train, which is very, very much a possibility.
Yeah.
The good news is Bobby Jindal's not relevant. Scott Walker, Paul Ryan, Ted Cruz, they're not relevant among millennials, and millennials are saying, you know what, I've had enough of this old stuff.
Yeah, well, and Scott Walker wouldn't even be governor if it wasn't for, you know, millions and millions of dollars of money coming in from outside his state, you know, a lot of the Koch brothers, so among others. So absolutely right. Mike Papantonio, host of the Ring of Fire radio program, Ring of Fire Radio, also Ring of Fire TV, now on Free Speech TV. It's also ringoffireradio.com. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, Pap, I forgot to thank you for being with us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back. It's Thursday. Let's get geeky on schools of fish. According to new research published in the journal Current Biology, the answer to how fish know how to swim in schools may lie in their DNA. The research suggests that the fish schooling is not a learned behavior. It's a behavior that comes out of the fish genome. To figure out the roots of this fish schooling behavior, the researchers studied sticklebacks, a type of small fish that lives in both salt and freshwater. Researchers created several fake fish models, hung them in the water, moved them around to attract the real sticklebacks to come over and form a school. Then by crossbreeding one kind of stickleback that loves to school with another type that's pretty reluctant to join a school, the researchers identified two regions in the stickleback's genome that are associated with the schooling behavior. And as it turns out, one of those regions is also associated with the development of specialized sensory structures in fish. This is called a lateral line that helps them detect vibrations in the water. The reason this is important is because those vibrations in the water are the way that fish vote. As the fish move from side to side, they're voting. Shall we move to the left? Shall we move to the right? And so this lateral line is a vote tallying machine. The researchers in the study argue that the findings from the study could be applicable to complex human social behaviors as well. Anna Greenwood, one of the researchers, told Live Science that because an evolutionarily shared neural circuit, as well as some of the same neurochemicals and hormones, control social behavior in all vertebrates, what we learn about genetic changes in fish could ultimately provide insight into human behavioral variation. One of the reasons why fish swim in schools is to better protect themselves from predators. Essentially, they're all working together for the well-being of the population and functioning like a democracy. But the idea of democracy in the animal kingdom is nothing new. I talk about it in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? There's an innate sense of democracy within most, if not all, of the animal kingdom. For example, red deer of Eurasia live in herds and spend a lot of time grazing and lying down together. Some deer are ready to move one from herding or lying down before others. But scientists have noticed that red deer herds only move when about 60% of the adults stand up. Even if a dominant deer stands up to make a move, the herd is still likely going to make a democratic decision on whether to stay or go. Meanwhile, with chimpanzees, no alpha male can capture power without support from the females of his group. According to the Institute for the Study of Animal-Human Relationships, the male has to be accepted by the females before he can gain his status. Females can be very choosy, and if the females don't approve of the alpha male, they won't mate with them. If that does happen, the alpha males will be overthrown by their peers. So based on the findings of the fish study, what we already know about our fellow members of the animal kingdom, working together for the common good and making democratic decisions could be a trait that's ingrained in even human DNA. In fact, I would assert that it definitely is. In other words, despite the state of politics in Washington, D.C. today, democracy is quite literally in our DNA. It is. I mean, it just is. This is how we're wired. We are social animals, and we are wired for democracy. So, Judy in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. Hey, Judy, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I didn't think you'd get to me so fast. Hey, mess with Texas, and then I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
I saw on Link or Free Speech TV a week or two ago, they were showing very affluent. Now, I mean, these are very wealthy people, like doctors, lawyers, bankers, etc., and they were getting fracking literally in their backyards. So you could move to Texas and, you know, have fracking for your closest neighbor that make it virtually impossible to sell your home.
Well, that's not good.
The governor of Maryland and Perry were on Crossfire last night. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And forest fires. With all these fires, what happens to all the carbon that these trees were holding? Does that get released into the air?
Yeah, it gets released into the atmosphere. It's not a large amount of carbon.
One of the votes on the House today is to open up public lands for more timber cutting.
Right. Which we don't need. Right, absolutely. We need our forests. We need more forests. We need to go back to the CCC. We need to be planting forests. Because forests, although they don't permanently sequester carbon, they do it for anywhere from 100 to 500 years. And, you know, lifespan of the trees, depending on whether they're softwoods or hardwoods. And we need to be able to take a break from all, you know, we're pumping, I think it's 25 pounds per person per day or something like some mind-boggling amount of carbon into the atmosphere. You know, for all 7 billion people of us on Earth. And actually, that's the amount that's going into the ocean. I read that yesterday. And so we've got to do something about that. We absolutely. Judy, thank you for sharing that about even rich people in Texas are getting fracked. It's interesting. Good to know. Thank you for the call. Brian in Dunkirk, Indiana. Hey, Brian. Ted Cruz?
Cruz. He has this silly commercial on TV, yes or no on Obamacare.
Right.
So that call in, naturally, I voted for Obama. I voted for Obamacare. So, I'm pro-Obamacare, yes. And they're like, okay, thank you. And then just for a lark, for fun, I call back and say, okay, no Obamacare. I'm with Ted Cruz, you know. And then I get this little speech from him. And then after he's done with that and it's done, I hang up, and 5 minutes later they call me back, basically asking for a donation.
Oh, man.
And I just,
because they got caller ID, they got your phone number, or because you gave it to them?
No, I didn't give it to them. I guess they got caller ID. You know, these days they can do anything.
Sure. And they called you back and asked for money. Were they asking for money for Ted Cruz, or were they asking for money for? Say what?
Yeah.
It was for Ted Cruz himself.
Yeah.
So this guy's just a hustler.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, like most Republicans.
Yeah, well said. Brian, thanks for sharing the story with us. That's amazing. I'm just astounded. Well, actually, I'm not astounded. I guess this is how the Republicans do it. I mean, this is they've been doing this for years and years and years with so-called Christian TV. The Republican Party has been doing it. They get people all whipped up, get them all hysterical, and then say, and if you just send us $25, we will put an end to this. Right.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
See, the movements that actually interest me are the ones that say, show up, you know, do a meeting in your home, invite some friends. Then there's something there. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And welcome back. Oh, that's the wrong mouse. Okay. Helps if I use the right mouse when I'm trying to put people on the air. Archie in Yucca Valley, California. Hey, Archie, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hey, matey.
Ahoy.
This is the Kiss Kid out here in the Mojave Desert. Three cheers to Diana and her letters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, Tom, that's a simple little everyday miracle. She got motivated and did it. Anyhow, the reason I called, am I talking to Free Speech? Can I talk to the Free Speech TV people?
free speech, you know, to the extent that they are watching you, they you know.
Okay,
yeah.
I just sent off my fall contribution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm old now, and I'm on Social Security, so I don't have to pay the taxes and all that stuff. But I decided to tax myself. I could send them 1% of my Social Security because we've got to keep them. I hope they can get maybe another network if we can all get together. But another thing, you have had a man on. I call him the quantum guy. When he was on a riff with how the connectivity of us all.
Yeah, quantum entanglement.
Yes, that we're all entangled, and the truth will get squeezed out as we get involved and push and I don't know, use this entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I remember Obama saying, you got to push me to do this. And look at what we did with the telephones and the emails and the Twitters and all that. I don't know any of that technology. I write letters. I'm old school. I write them, handwriting.
Yeah, don't underestimate the impact of that, by the way. Handwritten letters have a lot more impact than stuff that comes out of computers or emails. And phone calls have a lot of impact, too.
And Tom, it excites me. Did you hear the beauty, the life, the enthusiasm, the spirit in Diana?
Mm.
And another thing, I have a phone book. I have it full of all. I call it the directory in Washington, and I slow the girls down, and I get phone numbers. You know, I get it all prepared, my phone book. And I went cuckoo on that when they wanted to do that quick strike in Syria. And apparently this entanglement, this connectivity worked because it stopped.
Yeah. Americans, there is change afoot. There is change in the air. And I agree with you, Archie. I think that we all are all part of the same consciousness, that we are entangled at some very, very deep level that is so deep that it's just – that is disconnected from our ability, our conscious mind, our ability to notice it at a conscious level. So instead we notice its effects, its consequences, and that's what you're talking about, and I'm totally with you. Archie, thank you for calling and sharing that. That was a very uplifting comment. John in Downington, Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Ahoy, John.
Ahoy, landlubber. Yeah, you know, thinking about what you were just talking about with the quantum entanglement, you know, the flying spaghetti monster is holding us all to the ground.
Yes.
So that's another way we're all connected.
Of course.
And I just wanted to say it's...
with his noodly appendages.
Yes. And on top of Talk Like a Pirate Day, it's also Pastafarian New Year and the holiest day in the Pastafarian calendar.
Is it? Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. It's the next two, that is just ahead of... what you call Propaganda Day on Halloween, but yes.
Right, so this is for the Pastafarians, this is sort of Yom Kippur.
Sure.
Or Rosh Hashanah, excuse me. Yeah, I'm mixing up my Jewish holidays. Yeah, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
The New Year's and the holiest day of the year today for the Pastafarian religions. Well, thank you, John. And by the way, don't call me a landlubber. I live on the water. But I appreciate the sentiment. It's great to hear you talk like a pirate. Dane in Seattle, listening on KBCS. Hey, Dane.
Hi there.
Hey, you wanted to disagree with me about democracy and animals?
Yeah, I just had an interesting point. I was looking at some prehistory here, and it sees a lot of human beings typically organize themselves along consensus base rather than democratic or hierarchical base in our little tribes that we had before we started planting plants in our agrarian revolution. And I know
I agree. By democracy, I meant something like consensus. How? What did you think I meant?
I thought you meant more of like a hierarchy with elected officials.
No. The way that it works is that, the original study on red deer is a big one. This is the one that was kind of the anchor for the chapter in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? And that was that they had this herd of deer near one of the universities, and they put these cameras in the trees to watch them, and they wanted to see what would happen. They assumed, you know, they knew that there was an alpha male. And they assume, and there's like decisions that have to be made, like when do we go to the water hole? And it's an important decision, because if you go too early, then you know, some deer may not be grazing long enough and they may not get enough nutrients. If you go too late, somebody gets dehydrated. I mean, there's actually an importance to it. And so they figured that at some point the alpha deer in his infinite wisdom would say, okay, guys, time to go. And what they found was that everybody pretty much ignored whatever the alpha deer wanted. The alpha deer only was the alpha deer in terms of preference for sexual partners. He had the first choice of sex partners. That was it, which evolutionarily makes sense. But when it came to decision-making for the group, when the animals started moving their bodies pointing toward one of three different water holes, when more than 50% had pointed toward a particular water hole, then the entire herd would move toward that, would point to that, and would move to that water hole. And so then the researchers said, okay, well, how do we get this alpha deer to really, really, you know, assert his authority? So they thought, okay, we'll put a predator in here. So they put the scent of a predator, you know, they took a stuffed fox or a deer or a wolf or something and put some smell on. So the deer thought there was actually a wolf there at one of the three water holes. And what they found was that the presence of danger didn't add power to the alpha deer. Instead, what it did is it caused it shifted the threshold for decision making among the group from 50% to 66% to 2/3. So it took 2/3 of the group making a decision. So you know, supermajority rule, which, by the way, we wrote into our Constitution, you know, for really serious stuff like treaties with other countries, for amending the Constitution, you got to have a 2/3 majority vote. So small d democracy actually functions in throughout the animal world. And they found this from termites all the way up to humans. Make sense?
All right. Well, thanks for clearing that up for me.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Dane. Great to hear from you. Danny in Bluefield, West Virginia. Hey, Danny, what's on you? You want to talk about nuclear business, Fukushima?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
I've stayed on the phone for an hour because I have some information. I work in the environmental side of the nuclear business,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like you and your audience are extremely concerned about Fukushima and nuclear power in general, and I just wanted to give you some actual facts of what's going on. First, I want to say I'm not here to grind any axe. I'm just here to give you the best information I can provide so that people aren't afraid of things that they don't need to be afraid of and know what actually to be afraid of. Fukushima, we've got people that have been over there working with the Japanese. A number of them have given up and come home because they now consider the problem insoluble. When they poured millions of gallons of seawater over the melting reactors and melting fuel, it was bad enough that the fuel was melting, but worse still is when you pour seawater over delicate electronic and mechanical equipment, you might as well forget about it. You can't turn a valve after. You certainly can't use the wiring or the gauges or anything. They're accumulating hundreds of thousands of gallons of contaminated water in tanks. They've now got over 1,500,000 gallon tanks that are already full. They're building another 1,000 more. They're continuing to try and keep the fuel from a total meltdown by pouring more and more and more water on it. They really have no way of controlling what happens to that water once it's been irradiated. A lot of it is going into the groundwater. A lot of it is going into the ocean. But it's basically out of control. And when they say that they're going to solve the problem, the Japanese government is promising to fix it, they can't. It's out of control.
Right.
It's not going to melt down, but it's not a controllable situation.
Yeah, your information completely comports with what I understand from the nuclear experts we get on from beyondnuclear.org. Danny, thanks for calling and sharing that. I appreciate it. Philippe in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We got a minute to the break, Philippe. It's all yours.
Hi, Tom. Love the show. I have a hypothesis why the star might be turned upside down.
On the Republican logo? Okay.
Yes. I think it was a nod to oligarchs and plutocrats after the Bush took over, because it happened around the same time. Mm-hmm. And I heard that the Freemasons love that symbol, the pentagram. And I heard that, in fact, the White House is at the tip of a star, if you looked at it from above.
It is, yeah. If you look at the maps of Washington, D.C., there's all kinds of symbolic masonry stuff that Lafont designed into the city when Washington, D.C. was designed. So you think that the Republican star, the stars in the Republican flag or their logo, were flipped upside down not to celebrate Satan worshiping, but to celebrate money, basically the billionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Jesus said you got to serve either God or mammon, and mammon is a fancy word for money or rich people. So isn't that kind of the same thing?
I agree.
Okay.
Skulls and bones unite.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Philippe, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and the Talk Radio News Service after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, I've been asking Republicans for the 9, going on 10 years we've been doing this show, why did you guys flip the flag up the stars upside down? I still haven't gotten a straight answer. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour. Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave. In fact, actually help the whole rescued slave's family and get a picture of that rescued slave and the goat taken by Ellen, who's going to South Sudan in a week or two, aren't you?
Oh, I'm going on Monday morning.
Monday morning. Wow. God
yes.
be with you. Maybe,
so,
maybe you travel
we'll
safely.
Try and call you from there, maybe a
yeah.
little earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And give you the update.
Great. Well, Ellen's in the studio with us. Ellen, what's going on in
okay,
the world?
Okay. Well, Benghazi. So the richest
oh,
man,
no.
The bankster of the Congress, I think he
Darrell
is.
Darrell Issa. He's the second richest man
oh,
in the
he's
House
the second. I thought he was yeah. the richest. Okay. So Darrell Issa.
$700 million.
Yeah. Darrell Issa is having yet another hearing today. And this time he really tried to pull at the heartstrings. He tried to get, or did get, and I heard at least two members of family members. Members of people killed in Benghazi. One woman said she kept on saying at her son's casket, you know, how did this happen? How did this happen? And she said she was told lies. This was about the videotape. And then she was told, well, the president doesn't really care about you. I mean, this was the
emotion. He had this in testimony before
Congress?
He had Congress?
This. She was testifying today. I heard it with my own little beady ears.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Oh, my. The mother of one of the four people who died.
And then there was a father of one of them. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is what he is resorting to on his obsession with Benghazi. Now,
well,
I actually think there's a couple questions that aren't being asked. And one of them is, were we doing any Syrian gun exchange running for
yeah,
the...
Yeah, I'd like to know what was the CIA up to in that area.
And were
like
there
to...
renditions there?
Exactly. And also, to what extent did the Republican gutting of the State Department security budget play into the fact that he didn't have enough security? I mean, there's a bunch of legitimate questions,
what?
But this really isn't about Benghazi.
No,
this
because
is really...
if those were legitimate questions, they would have come up. Now, the gutting of the funding did come up, and it was done by the Democrats, who actually said, well, if you when can you, if you don't, and the, I think was one of the people, not from the State Department, but from the Defense Department said, you know, you can't just decide you're going to do this at the last minute. We have to plan. We have to put in security. The money has got to be there.
Right, right. But I don't think that Darrell Issa is doing this because he gives a rat's patootie about Benghazi. I think he's doing it because he's anticipating that Hillary Clinton's going to run for president.
Well, that's very interesting. Ed Morrissey on Hot Air, somebody that I know pretty well through all the talkers things, he basically said on his Hot Air blog that nothing is going to prevent Issa from making a damning case about Clinton's leadership, whether or not one exists.
Yeah.
And so this is what this is about.
Yeah,
this we're
is,
just going
is,
to cut her off just in case she decides to run.
Yeah, this is all about, you know, throwing enough dirt against Hillary Clinton's face that some of it will stick. You know, we could extend the metaphor, but anyhow.
Exactly.
What else is going
exactly.
On?
All right. The speaker had a press conference today.
Speaker John Boehner.
That's right. And he said, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. He said the president's happy to negotiate with Putin, but he won't engage with Congress on a plan to deal with the deficits that threaten our economy.
What? He said that?
Yeah.
This president keeps you know, calling up Congress and saying, I'll come to you. You come to me. Let's talk. Let's meet halfway. I'll
play golf with you.
Yeah, I'll even cut Social Security, right? I mean, the president's
right.
even offered to do chain CPI, and the Republicans are, none of it's good enough for us.
And then he said at his press conference that he expects his colleagues to defund the Obamacare bill.
Boehner said that.
That's Speaker Boehner said that. Now, the White House then reacted to that, and they announced formally today, although this is no surprise, that they're going to veto, the president's going to veto any legislation in the House that would make funding the government dependent on defunding health care reform legislation. So they know right away that they are going to end that. And he said basically that this is going to defund the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, the House is going to vote yet another time on this, as well as continuing the government on Friday. That's tomorrow.
Okay. So, you know, the sequence by which legislation happens is it starts in the House. It goes to the Senate.
Any funding bill has to start in the House. Anything that involves money.
Yeah, anything that involves money.
Naming a post office
doesn't
have to.
That can start in the Senate, too. Yeah, right. You're absolutely right. So anyhow, it starts in the House, then it goes to the Senate, then when they reconciled it and it's the same bill, it goes to the White House for signature. So if, which is pretty a real stretch because we're talking to Democratic
these days it's a stretch.
Senate, but if a bill that defunded Obamacare and continued the government operating made its way to the White House and the president vetoed it the day before the government shut down, the Republicans would do a dance and say, look at, the president just shut down the government. That's the scenario that in their weird little imaginations they think
they think they're
going
to get to, but they're not going to get to there.
No, because it's never going to make its way through the Senate.
Exactly.
So why are they even trying?
You know, it was interesting. I gave that same little discussion this morning to one of my talk show hosts, and my talk show host said, but there's a lot of people who, I said, they're not going to get reelected. He said, there's a lot of these young freshmen that don't care. They're there to make their point. That's what they believe that got them there, and they're not going to back away even if they know they're going to lose an election on it.
Right, right.
I mean, crazy. You know, there's some crazy people in this world.
Yeah. Well, I guess you have to admire people who have the courage of their convictions even when they're wrong. Anyway. What else is going on?
So the House leader, Nancy Pelosi, said that a lot of jobs are going to be lost if Republicans don't pass a farm bill. As you know, Debbie Stabenow, senator from Michigan, has worked very, very hard on that. She said that this program that they want to cut would cut roughly $40 billion in food stamp money and other kinds of supplemental programs. She said one in five kids in the United States struggle with hunger, that the bill is going to jeopardize this more. And then she talked a little bit about the debt limit today. And she said, Republicans are determined to hold our full faith and credit hostage, and it's going to raise interest rates on mortgages, student loans, credit cards, and affect citizens' 401ks.
Wow. Welcome to the crash.
That's right.
Incredible.
That's
coming
up.
There you go. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Off to CIS House Sedan next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's always great to see you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and we are learning more and more about the Navy Yard shooter here in Washington, D.C. a few days ago, and it's raising more and more questions, among them perhaps the role of psychiatric medications. Dr. Peter Bregan is with us. He's a medical doctor, a practicing psychiatrist, the author of numerous articles and books, including Medication Madness, The Role of Psychiatric Drugs in Cases of Violence, Suicide, and Crime. His website, Bregan, BREGGIN.com. Dr. Bregan, welcome back to the program.
Tom, thanks for having me on these important issues. You know, the breaking story on what's going on in D.C. with this mass murderer is that he was taking an antidepressant.
Now, was this
the New York Times?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
New York Times reported that he started the antidepressant 24 days before he bought the gun and 26 days before the violence. He, when he had these symptoms of people seeing him and tormenting him through the walls of his hotel, he went to the VA in Providence. They started him on trazodone. And then when he got back to D.C., he got a refill of his trazodone from the D.C. VA. So he was clearly on the drug. This is one of the most clear-cut cases where we have a single drug started a short time before the incident, well within the range that we expect this to happen, which is usually a matter of weeks, maybe 2 or 3 months, but usually a matter of a few weeks. And this is just fits perfectly into that. And I think it makes a strong presumptive argument that, in fact, trazodone played a role in tipping him over. He already obviously had violent tendencies. The label, Tom, for trazodone, like the other antidepressant labels, actually lists aggression and hostility as a part of a string of amphetamine-like symptoms. Can I just – we don't usually read on the radio, but can I read you this
sure.
two lines?
Go for it.
All right. This is right out of the FDA-approved label. People call it the package insert. It's also known as the prescribing information. Okay. And this is the effects of trazodone: anxiety, agitation, panic attacks, insomnia, irritability, hostility, aggressiveness, impulsivity, akathisia, hypomania, and mania. Now, akathisia is a severe restlessness that can lead to violence. Every one of these has to do with violence, including the hostility and aggressiveness, obviously. And then there's a medication guide, which people are supposed to be given by their doctor or their pharmacist, which he probably didn't get. And the medication guide for trazodone says to call a doctor if you have one of these warning signs. And one of them is, quote, acting aggressive, being angry or violent.
Wow.
And it's amazing.
Wow. Is it with suicidal ideation, suicidal thinking also one of the
suicidal
things?
Suicidal thinking is definitely one aspect of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of these kinds of crimes are also suicidal. In
sure. I mean, it's actually suicide going out in a perceived blaze of glory. I mean, this is the same thing as the suicide bombers in the Middle East. Instead of strapping a vest on himself and taking out 10 people, he went in with a gun and took out 10 people. But the effect was the same. What kind of drug, what family of drug is trazodone?
Trazodone is excuse me about the sound. I'm going to hang up our connection on the other line. That's what it's doing. Trazodone is called an atypical antidepressant, and doctors all over the country are going to get on the air and say, hey, we just give it as a sedative at night. We don't even use it as an antidepressant anymore. And they're not going to tell you that it's an SSRI reuptake inhibitor. Does that sound familiar?
Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Which is the same family of drugs as Paxil and what's the most famous one of all? Prozac. You wrote a book talking about Prozac, Zoloft. Yeah.
And the thing about it is that it's not selective. It's just a reuptake inhibitor of serotonin, but it also inhibits the reuptake of some other drugs.
Right.
But it's in that class of the drugs.
So it increases the levels of circulating serotonin. And these drugs, these SSRI drugs, all of them have suicide or homicide associated with them. Do they not?
They do.
Yeah, don't worry about the sounds. We'll just
okay. You can
we'll
hear me shuffling
it.
Around.
It's hard to hear here anyway. That's quite all right. Not to worry, Dr. Breggin. We're talking with Dr. Peter Breggin, a practicing psychiatrist and the author of Medication Madness, among other books. And he's pointing out that the Navy Yard shooter was on an SSRI drug. SSRI drugs have been associated with. Correct me if I'm wrong, most of the mass shootings that we know of in the history of the United States. Is that an accurate statement?
I don't think we have that kind of information.
Okay.
But they've been involved with an awful lot of the mass shootings. The ones – you see, most of them, Tom, we don't even have a good chronology. Most of the mass shootings, we know the person was seeing a psychiatrist. We know the person was probably on psychiatric drugs. But the ones we can track are SSRI-related.
Right.
Often.
Is there
given
the side effects of SSRIs, and I have several friends who went on SSRI drugs, these antidepressants, this new family of antidepressants that were supposed to replace the benzodiazepines, replace the Valium kind of drugs, back a decade or so ago, because they're not as addictive, right? They're not as habit-forming. And people who I know, one a friend of ours, she went on I think it was Paxil after her father died because she was depressed about it. And that was 2 years ago. She can't get off it. Every time she tries to get off it, she goes through like something like heroin withdrawal. I mean, it's just this horrible, you know, depressed withdrawal experience. Is that common? And is it time for us to start questioning the efficacy or even the value of having this family of drugs in our pharmacopoeia?
Yes, to everything you're saying, it can be horrendous to come off of this group of drugs. The patient can experience horrible shooting electroshocks in the head, weird paresthesias down the arms. All kinds of bad stuff can take place. People can get very disturbed, very anxious, suicidal. The withdrawal from these drugs is very serious, and a lot of people, Tom, even with good help, have a terrible time getting off these medications.
And the thing I find amazing is the doctors today, psychiatrists today, they've gotten sensitized to the benzo drugs. You know, they're reluctant to give sleeping pills for more than 6 months at a time, or Valium, you know, day-to-day drugs. The Valium and Zoloft, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but or the sleeping varieties, the Halcyons and the Restorils and things, because the benzo drugs do have a kind of an addictive somewhat nature. But they're not reluctant to give these SSRIs, which appear to be even more addictive.
Yeah, well, let me make a distinction. I mean, the point you're making are good. I'd go further than you're saying. The benzos are highly addictive drugs.
Sure.
They really are very seriously addictive. No one should take them for more than a few weeks unless there's some very special reason, because they become, by 6 weeks, you can be worse off than you were before. Studies show that if you're taking Xanax, which is one of them, by 6 or 8 weeks, Tom, you got more panic than you did before, huh. And you can't get off them.
Yeah.
The difference with the Paxil drugs is they're not fun. They don't give you a euphoria usually, or it's very short-lived. So the person isn't trying to get more and more of it. The person just can't get off of it. And that's a little different phenomenon.
But they become, once they're on it, they're a lifetime customer for the drug companies,
right.
Which is what the drug companies are all excited about.
That's right. And another issue you raised, Tom, is that the research actually shows they don't even work.
Yeah, and that's the scary stuff. We've run out of time, but Dr. Peter Breggin, people can read all about it over at Breggin, BREGGIN.com, and read your book, Medication Madness, The Role of Psychiatric Drugs in Cases of Violence, Suicide, and Crime. Thank you for the great work you're doing, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks for coming on our program. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Was this suicide by cop? And if so, was it driven by pharmaceuticals? It's the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. And Rich in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Rich, you wanted to follow up on the flooding going on there? Give us a report.
Yeah, I just was listening to NPR at the news break, and they said, Tom, there's been two oil spills up here in Platteville, which is in north central Colorado, out on the South Platte, that spills out to Nebraska. By the way, the flooding has reached Nebraska out in Sedgwick County. That's how far, from Boulder through Denver, Aurora. It's all through three tributaries, the Poudre, the Cashula Poudre, the St. Vrain, and the Big Thompson, which in 76, 148 people were killed when there was 5 hours of flooding. I live out in Aurora. The other day we had 10 hours of flooding.
Right.
10 hours of rain straight.
Right, right.
So just to give you some analysis, there was 5 hours in 76 when the Big Thompson came down. That came and killed 148 people. But two oil spills out on the Eastern Plains, Platteville by Anadarko, is reported. I just heard, as I said, on NPR. 18,000 gallons of oil.
Mm-hmm. So when does this hit the Mississippi? Where does this go? Is this going to back up the what is the river that has the two nuclear power plants on it that nearly flooded out 2 years ago?
I think they're in Nebraska. I don't know. I heard you ask that yesterday about the guy from Boulder, as they called it.
Yeah.
And he was, we don't have any out here in Colorado, but I know going toward Nebraska, and then there's
right.
the Red River.
Right.
I think that runs down from the Dakotas.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to learn a little more about this and
like I said, the three large tributaries from here that run east are that feed into the South Platte, which I don't know how far that runs. If that goes all the way into the Mississippi or where it ends at or where it dead ends at. But
I don't think this movie has played itself out yet. I mean, there's a ways to go. Rich, thanks for the update on that, and thanks for listening to AM 760 there in Denver. Mary in Glen Ellen, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. You know, I'm just listening to your conversation about antidepressants being a cause of mass shootings. And I really take some offense at that for all the people that are helped by taking antidepressants and have no tendencies whatsoever like that. So I don't really agree with the way that conversation or the way I interpreted it, listening to it.
Okay. Your opinion is noted. I would encourage you to read the literature on SSRI drugs and suicide. The FDA has required them to be labeled specifically, warning people about suicidal thoughts. And in the opinion of many of these mass shooters, you know, they always end up dead because that's the way that they intended it. But
for the few mass murderer shooters there's a whole lot of people that are helped.
Oh, I don't disagree. Well, actually, Peter Bragan would disagree. He points out the studies that show that the SSRI drugs stack up with placebos. Basically, people given sugar pills, people given SSRIs, in both cases, thinking that they're getting strong psychiatric medication, get roughly the same results. And there is a fair body of literature that supports that. But that said, except that the sugar pills are not addictive. That said, though, there are people who are suffering from severe depression or other forms of mental illness, and they do need help. And in my mind, the question is, what kind of help should they be getting? Should they be getting pharmaceutical help, or should they be getting some sort of help like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy or therapy that helps enhance their resilience? The problem is the health insurance companies will pay for 15 minutes for a psychiatrist to write a prescription. They won't pay for an hour for a psychiatrist to sit and talk with you and work with you.
Well, I'm not aware of that because my insurance happens to pay for both. But I just think it's a bad message to send that, you know, people on antidepressants are.
I am not saying everybody on antidepressants could shoot somebody or that everybody should get off them. But I do think that they are. But my personal opinion, Mary, is that they are wildly overprescribed. But you know, your point is noted, and it's a good point. It's a good point. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, as the old cliche goes. Thank you, Mary, for the call. Andrew in Hollywood, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Andrew, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Hey, Tom, can you hear me? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for your awesome work, new listener on KPFK. You're a great addition to our great station here in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
I heard you talking about using petroleum for plastic products as opposed to burning it, but saying it was still okay to use for other uses for plastics.
This was a discussion we had yesterday,
Yeah, I beg to disagree. I think anything that we suck out of the ground should be left in the ground. It's there. It was in the ground for a reason. I think we should just use plants, things that come up to the surface. Plastics made from petroleum take millions of years to degrade. It's a major source of pollution in the ocean. Mm. And we can make plastics from plant oils such as hemp oil. And I ask you and your listeners to read The Emperor Wears No Clothes, A History of Hemp and Its Uses by Jack Herra, which discusses plant oils and hemp oil for making plastics.
Yeah, you make a great point. And in fact, if you look at the Great Pacific Gyre, you know, there's this floating island of plastic in the North Pacific that is miles and miles across that kills pretty much any fish that gets near it because they get entangled in it or they eat these things. And increasingly we're seeing whales and other large fish that are dying as a consequence of ingesting plastics. And these petroleum-based plastics do persist for in some cases, centuries, and it's not a good thing. And you can make plastics out of corn and other vegetable materials. And hemp is one of the most efficient converters of sunlight into everything from diesel fuel to fabrics that could be used for clothing. That's why the first drafts of the Constitution, the first and the Declaration of Independence were written on hemp paper. So, yeah, okay, I agree with you, and I withdraw my comment. I understand there are a few compounds, some pharmaceuticals, some chemicals, that so far we only know how to make out of petroleum. Maybe we should keep a little bit of it for that, but maybe even those can be blown away with plant-based materials. So, Andrew, excellent point. Thank you for the call. I stand corrected.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It is so nice doing a program where I've got the smartest listeners on earth hanging out with me. I get off track. Bring me right back. Good, the bad, and the very, very heteraceously ugly. The good. The English Premier League, the UK's biggest soccer league, announced on Wednesday that it's thrown its support behind a campaign led by the English gay rights group Stonewall to use soccer as a way to raise awareness about homophobia. As part of the campaign, Stonewall sent rainbow laces to every soccer club in England, Scotland, and Scotland, for their players to wear. A number of stars, like Queen's Park Rangers midfielder Joey Barton, have said that they will wear the laces. Soccer is the world's most popular sport, and English Premier League games are watched by people around the globe, so this could be a great opportunity to raise awareness for a good cause. It's good on the Premier League for showing its support. The bad. Representative Michelle Bachmann. According to a new report from the watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, the outgoing Minnesota congresswoman is one of the top 13 most corrupt politicians in the Capitol. It's no secret that corruption and ethics violations are pretty common up on Capitol Hill, and Bachmann wasn't the only person on CREW's list. But when you consider that she basically made a career for herself by spreading lies about welfare fraud and greedy food stamp users, her presence on the corruption list is pretty damning. And I got to say, sort of satisfying. And the very, very ugly Congressman Phil Gingrich. During a time of economic downturn, you'd think members of Congress would be thankful for a job that pays pretty well and offers vacation days, but apparently not. According to a Wednesday report, the National Journal, Georgia Congressman Phil Gingrich said during a meeting with fellow lawmakers that he didn't care about how a proposed Republican bill to fiddle with Obamacare affected staffers of other congressmen, because they could go out and lobby while he was stuck with a salary of only, yes, only $172,000 a year. So there you have it. While regular Americans struggle to get by during the biggest downturn since the Great Depression, Republicans in Congress are worrying about their six-figure congressional salaries and whether that can keep up with Washington lobbyists' pay. That is just very, very ugly. Over at the Daily Kos, they're asking the question, why do Republicans hate children? I'm baffled by this. They want to, you know, by defunding Obamacare, this piece of legislation that the Republicans are going to push through the House in all probability today, it's going to cut $13.3 billion out of a program called CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. It's going to end free health insurance for poor children, or at least that part of it. Republicans work like crazy, legislatively, effort-wise, protesting, marching, whatever, to force women to have babies, even if they've been raped. And then once they have them, they want to cut off the funding for food stamps and medical care. What's going on here? What part of rationality is like, you know, what? This is like on the edge of lobotomy stuff. Anyway, Paul in Northbrook, Illinois. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Yeah, that was exactly my comment.
Oh, really?
I'm an independent. I don't
take sides, but I just don't get it. They want to force poor women to have abortions.
To have babies. You mean not to have abortions.
Right, to not have abortions, to have their babies. They're going to force poor women to have their babies, and then they're going to say, by the way, we just cut all this money out of food stamps, so we're not going to give you any money to support it. So they should either pay for their abortions because they don't want to pay for their kids to feed them, or they should say, we're not going to pay for your abortions, but we'll help you feed your kids because you're too poor to even pay for an abortion. You're going to be too poor to pay for your to feed your kids.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They got one or the other. They got to pick one, but they can't say both. They're going to say, you got to have the baby, and we're not going to help you pay for their food.
Yeah, but they do say both. They're fundamentally schizophrenic. It's amazing. Paul, thanks for the call. Excellent point. Carol in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Carol.
Oh, hi, Tom. You know, with this latest killing and the thing with Starbucks, where they said, we don't want people to come into the Starbucks store with their guns.
Right.
And the reaction to this, all in the reaction to every single one of these shootings by the NRA and the gun people and everything else, have they forgotten history? This country was settled only because guns were not allowed inside city limits. The gangsters who took over the big cities in the 30s were not really controlled until machine guns were banned.
Right. Right. And in the Wild West, you always had to check your guns when you came to town. You had to drop off at the sheriff's office.
Yes, or you had to leave them at the town limits.
Right.
This country was not settled because everybody was running around with guns.
Yeah.
This country became what it became because people respectfully did not take their guns in places where...
Carol, here's the thing that maybe women don't understand, but as a man, I can tell you, I know enough of these guys. I am convinced that the rabid gun fanatics, I'm not talking about people who like to play with guns or people who like to, you know, target shoot or, you know, even hunt, you know, but the people who are obsessed with their gun to the point that they'll walk into a Starbucks with an AR-15 strapped to their back. These are men with small penises who are trying to compensate for it. And they have, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. These are men who have spent most of their lives feeling very, very insecure about their own sexuality, and if they can strap a giant phallic symbol to their back and strut around with it, it gives them the feeling that they're compensating for it. So, Carol, thank you for the call, but I'm not being facetious. I am not. I am being dead serious. Kim in Phelan, California. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Shiver me timbers.
Thank you.
I called to talk to you about psych meds.
Yes.
I myself take four different psych meds. One of them is Seroquel, and that's probably the hardest one to get off. Hold on, I've got to catch my breath. I've been on that one for about 12 to 14 years, maybe longer.
Wow.
I've tried to get off of it, and when I do, I have auditory hallucinations. I'm writhing around in my bed in pain, and I can't sleep for days or longer than that. I mean, it just seems like forever.
And are these SSRI drugs?
Yeah, Seroquel is, and I also take three other psych meds as well. And I think it's just changed my brain chemistry so much that it just can't function.
Well, that's the theory, is that by inhibiting the ability of the cells in the brain that reuptake the serotonin, the brain actually compensates for this by creating more of these. So when you stop taking the drug, which causes the levels of serotonin in the brain to reduce, the cells that burn the reuptake, that recycle the serotonin, there's more of them. And so the serotonin levels go wacky. You know, they don't go back to some normal baseline. The brain actually modifies itself to adapt itself to these chemicals. So
I can vouch for that, as well as you know, the other psych meds that I take. You know, if I run out of them, I don't get to the pharmacy in time, or some, you know, I miss a few days, or you know, make an attempt to get off of them. It's scary stuff. No fun. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks for sharing your story. It's I know it's tough to share personal stories. That took a lot of courage. Sue in Morgan, Pennsylvania. Hey, Sue.
Let's make the Republicans walk the plank.
There you go. Ahoy.
Oh, I feel so much better for having said that. Thanks for your rant on the Texas governor today. I've been depressed all week, and I've been laughing and smiling all afternoon. Thank you.
Good.
I was on Prozac.
Uh-huh.
I have suffered with depression since I was born, 65 years ago. I am not the smartest tool in the land, but I'm not too dumb either. In 92, I started with one, and then I was still depressed, and they took me to two, and I was still depressed, and they took me to three a day. It was all I could do to keep from killing myself, and I knew it was chemical. On 9/3/1992, I knew I was going to kill myself. I called the suicide prevention hotline. They're only up 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. I called everybody I could. I couldn't reach anybody. I called the operator, asked for help. She said, not my problem, hung up on me. And I prayed like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane to save my life, and I was saved. So I will say to you that I watched Your Health Today with Dr. Richard Becker. Dr. Eric Braverman was on. He has a book called Younger Brain, Sharper Mind.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read it yet, but I took the notes on what's in the book, and I'm getting it, and it's supposed to help reverse all of this stuff.
All of the damage.
Aging.
That. That's great, Sue. And you're off the Prozac now.
Oh, I'm not on anything for depression. I just deal with my depression. One of the worst things you can do when you're depressed is try to suppress it.
Yeah.
If you're depressed, you're depressed for a reason, so bathe in it.
Right. Work through it.
And get through it.
Yeah.
And I have a suggestion.
Very quickly, please.
You know, you talk about Louise all the time. I just so admire your whole family from the stories that I hear from you. But why don't you make Louise a guest once a week? Or
she will not come on the air. Louise, we've been doing this show for 10 years. Louise has produced every single segment of every single show, and she will not even allow her voice to be on the air. It's just that's the line in the sand. She won't step over. I would love to have her on. Sue, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And even that provocation will not cause her to come on the air. So, she likes to do what she does. She runs the show. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and Prof in Rock Hill, South Carolina. What's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. How you doing today?
Good.
I just thought I'd ask you if you knew that a lot of people have been able to get over depression and paranoid schizophrenia just by smoking pot.
It wouldn't surprise me. I am I'm continuously astounded by the good science that is coming out indicating that pot doesn't just, treat glaucoma and MS and the nausea associated with chemotherapy and things like that. But there's just this whole spectrum of things. Pot seems to be a very, very effective, broad spectrum, both psychiatric and physiological pharmaceutical drug, and it can grow in your backyard. I mean, legally it should be able to grow in your backyard. And I think that the prohibition on marijuana, the prohibition even on research on marijuana, is insane. And if the Democratic Party wants to really start aggressively winning elections, particularly with young people, they will tomorrow morning say that what Washington State and Colorado did in decriminalizing not only medical marijuana but recreational marijuana was a good thing. I mean, 50,000 Americans die every year because of alcohol toxicity and things associated with alcohol abuse. You know how many people in the last 100 years have died from an overdose of marijuana?
Zero.
Zero, exactly. And, just that simple statistic. 50,000 people a year versus zero over the last 100 years, the last 1,000 years, should tell us that if we're going to criminalize a psychoactive substance, we should start with alcohol, not pot. Prof, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Carol in Hemet, California. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Supreme Court decision, I don't think even a month old. A case was taken, a woman in New Hampshire received from the state of New Hampshire $21 million
settlement because she had taken a pretty common painkiller, and it has calcified her body. Her organs, everything has turned into like bone.
Oh yeah, Mike Papantonio talked about that. Yeah, he was involved in that lawsuit.
I didn't know if the listening audience had heard about that.
Yeah.
But as a result, no generic medication manufacturer can ever be sued.
Yeah, this is the Supreme Court ruled this recently, and the generic manufacturers don't have to label with the same warnings as the original drug, and they can't be sued for failing to label. Excellent point, Carol. And it's just another example of how the John Roberts Court, John Roberts, of course, himself is a corporate lawyer, and it's got a bunch of corporate lawyers on it. It's the most corporate-friendly, billionaire-friendly, and outright hostile to poor people and minorities Supreme Court, probably in the living history of anybody, living memory of anybody alive today, and perhaps in the entire history of the court itself. Thank you, Carol, for that. Joanne, in Fort Collins, Colorado, listening on AM760. Hey, Joanne.
Hi there. I just kind of wanted to go back a couple conversations to where you and the gentleman were talking about the Republicans wanting to exclude women from having abortions and then cutting food stamps and all kinds of aid to poor women who want to support those children. And I wanted to say that not only are they going that route, they're going one step even deeper into our personal affairs, and that's they also want to limit our availability to birth control, and
they have successfully done this in some places.
Yes, absolutely. And I did phone campaigns and everything through the 70s before we got abortion rights and a lot of women's rights, and it just makes me ill to see what's happening to our states and to women's rights in this country, and and the empowering of women or the disempowering of women, because it affects, as you say, education, child care, I mean, everything down the line and all the way to wars. Yep. I so agree with you on your stand on that, and I just want to remind everybody that the Republicans are truly waging the war on women. And I'll friends, keep your comments offline.
Friends don't let friends vote Republican. That's Joanne, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to AM760. Mark in New York City, listening on WWRL.
Hey, Tom, nice to talk to you again. Two points that I just want to let you know. With the SSRIs, from what I understand, when you want to get off of them, you have to wean yourself off of them.
Right. That's true of narcotics and benzo drugs and pretty much anything else. Yeah.
That's right. So people who go off of it right away will suffer severe side effects,
right,
you know, because the body has to reacclimate itself. The other point I wanted to make was with the Obama being sort of like an accidental policymaker, meaning if you look at the LGBT and the Syria, both of them were sort of initiated by off-the-cuff remarks.
Mm-hmm.
The first one by Biden.
The
second one by
John Kerry.
You know, so it's kind of really kind of interesting how.
But what those remarks did is they hooked into the larger gestalt, you know, the larger zeitgeist, the spirit of the times that was in the mainstream population.
Right. But it does show sort of lack of proactiveness on Obama's part. You know, he's kind of too reactive.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I would like to see him get out in front and lead on, a number of these issues. And medical marijuana actually is one where so many lives are being destroyed. And for that matter, recreational marijuana. So many lives are being destroyed. So much crime is being perpetuated. So many poor communities are being devastated because this is their only entrepreneurial opportunity is to sell drugs. And, Mark, thank you for the call. And please, President Obama, consider a national, you know, an end to it, at least with regard to pot, an end to the national prohibition. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday, which means Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders, will be here to talk about all the important issues of the week and taking your calls, too. Plus, Anything Goes Friday. You choose the topics. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. You've got to participate. Tag your in. Get out there and occupy some. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.